Off top, in the late 1940s, Mike the Chicken got his head cut off and survived for 18 months. Play music!
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
Welcome to the Dominique Foxworth. We are joined by... I'm upset because I thought... Well, it's Chris Long, Charlottesville's own... But I didn't make him uncomfortable or weird with my off top. We always, our first guests always are like freaked out when I do something, say something stupid.
No, not at all. I was going to ask you a question about that.
What do you want to know?
A chicken survived how long?
18 months.
With no head.
Yeah, so it was going to be dinner for some farmer. He cut his head off. A blood clot kept him from bleeding to death. And some of his brain stem still stayed intact. So he was able to survive for 18 months.
Mike, not impressed.
What do you mean?
What did he do? What did he do with those 18 months? Was he, I mean, productive?
That's a good question. There? I mean, what does any chicken do that's productive? I think
they're supposed to run around when their heads are cut off. They're supposed to run around. Did he not run around?
So fair point is a productive chicken is a chicken that actually dies so we can eat them. Or lays eggs. So like,
you're exactly right.
He was in no man's land. Mike the Chicken was provided nothing for nobody. How dare
so
you, Mike?
Good, dude.
Oh man.
So I like those facts, bro.
Yeah, we had a good laugh before the show about a bunch of things. And whenever I see Chris now, whether it's on the internet or anything, I think about our trip to Vegas, which were a lot of good laughs. There's so much fun. Laughs, yeah. He's a fun guy to have around, and I'm a two-time right. Super Bowl champ. We forced him to move his Super Bowl trophies out of the screen because I'm hungry, which makes me grumpy.
So cranky.
And look at that. And those shiny things that I'm jealous of, they make me cranky too.
They make me cranky too because like now I'm not doing anything with my life. It's like a reminder of what was. You know
what do you mean? You got
I'm just joking, man. You know this podcast life is grind.
Yeah, it's grinding so hard. All right, Charlie. I guess we have to talk about football at some point. There was a lot of free agency popping a couple days ago, and now we have to talk about how the league has changed.
That's right, and we have a new bird whose productivity is going to be in question coming off an Achilles injury.
Ooh,
you see that transition? Segway. How about that
the
one?
Segue. Very good. Very good. Very good. He's been on a. Segway streak, so I'm getting, happy he's back in the game.
Getting roasted for terrible transitions. Kirk Cousins, he's an Atlanta Falcon. His productivity has been in question in clutch moments, you know, the primetime Kirk narrative, but this is a team that has a ton of skill position talent, and Desmond Ridder did not distribute the ball effectively in Arthur Smith's offense last year. They have Raheem Morris in there now. They have Kirk Cousins. How good does Kirk Cousins make the Falcons in your eyes?
Dude, I know I'm going to get boot off the stage for saying this, but I think Kirk's a good player, man. Like, listen, I just think some people eventually in the NFL, we have these narratives where because of the way a guy acts or the way he, you know, appears or like, you know, how meme worthy is he? Has he lost some big spots? Yeah, but how many quarterbacks are really stones in the NFL right now where you're like, yeah, the track record speaks for themselves? How many guys out there for Atlanta, who's a team that's a couple years into a build, right? And you've got some talent that you want to cash in on. How many guys that are available are going to guarantee you a Super Bowl? That's the name of the game, dude. All the time these teams are in purgatory where, you know, you're not picking in the top three and you have to add a veteran. I think as far as that goes, this is a pretty good addition. Now, this guy's a business All-American and all that stuff, but get your money, dude. And my only concern with him is coming off the Achilles. And I think Raheem Morris is great, dude. Mm-hmm. You know, last year watching the Rams coming into that season, I thought they should have blown it up. I was wrong about that. And, you know, I was happy to tell my old friends at the Rams when I saw them after the season, you guys proved me wrong, because I didn't know Matt Stafford had that in him physically to look the way he did this year. He was one of the five best quarterbacks in the league. I think you can make an argument that, you know, in the NFC, he was the best guy going to the playoffs, right? And so I just feel like – I feel like Raheem Morris did such a good job with that defense. The back end, there were a lot of guys that hadn't played a lot of snaps. It was like Aaron Donald, a lot of unproven guys, linebackers who you're nervous about having in coverage. And they made things work. And I think it was a testament to the job he did. Also, having been a head coach, he gives them a level of competency and excitement. And I think with the skill players they have, they can win that division. You know, this is not a a pipe dream to win the division with Kirk Cousins as a quarterback. So to me, mission accomplished. Yep. I really think that.
They can win the division and they could be in the NFC championship game. Like if you look around, we normally start, you got to check one box first before we get to the rest of the evaluation of your roster. And that box is a quarterback box. Yep. They've checked it. And yep. like, I'm with you, Kirk Cousins. I've been on a roller coaster since that move happened where I was like, I was all in. Yep. It's like they mess around and like, I was thinking they could win the NFC and be in the Super Bowl. And then I started looking back at, possible. I mean, they still can, but I was like thinking, I really like this team. Yeah. Yeah. Because their defense got better last year, and I know they're switching coordinators and switching schemes to some degree. But with Jesse Bates and Terrell on the edge and Onyemata and Jared, like a deep line, yeah. they have a good enough defense that I think can be productive. The relative stinkiness of their division helps them out a lot. And then there's the talent on the offense, and I think the second box that I like to check is offensive line.
Yes.
And they're good on the offensive line. And then they have all the weapons that you need. I don't love Drake London as much as other people. And I actually do think Darnell Mooney's going to be a good addition to them.
I like Mooney.
Yeah, he's going to be with a good quarterback for the first time in his career.
You know this too, Fox. Like, you know, one of the things that drove me crazy is about Brandon Staley's, like, last dance rant about how everybody's got to be, you need like a starting five. Well, he forgot the Steve Kerr looking guys. And I don't mean like a white slot guy. Yeah. I just mean like guys that aren't, that you need different right. skill sets yeah. and different sizes and different, you know, you need man beaters that you can put in a little stack on third and two that can get out in the flat and win. You need big possession guys. And, you know, having Kyle Pitts, London, and those big body guys, like mixing in a Mooney is great. And I just think overall, like somebody like Kyle Pitts, having been a high draft pick and not a great situation, like context matters for 90% of the players in the NFL. Yep. There are 10% of players. No, five, less than 5% yeah. of players. I don't know what the percentage is. You know, the guys I'm talking about yep. that can fly in any weather. And, you know, if Kyle Pitts needs better than Heinicke, Ridder, whoever was there the year before, to succeed, that doesn't make him a bust to me. That means you're failing him organizationally. And so bringing in a real live NFL quarterback, we're going to get to see what that kid's made of a little bit more. And like you said, like they have weapons, and I think they'll miss Nielsen. I love Ryan Nielsen.
Yeah, I do too.
And I think that defense played above their heads talent wise last year, but
Nielsen's the D coordinator for those who don't know. But yeah, I think this team, and Mooney's going to help them move the sticks on third down. But what I originally started out really high on once they pulled off this move, and then I started to realize that the floor is high and the ceiling, I think, can fluctuate. But what scares me, and this is a problem that the Falcons have not had in a while, so it's a nice problem for them to have, is Cousins, 36 years old, coming off an Achilles mm-hmm. injury. And prior to the injury, he wasn't a scrambler runner type. And it seems more and more that is the difference in a lot of these really important playoff games. You're playing yes. against really well schemed up defenses and against really talented defenses. And in big moments, you're going to have to move the ball with your legs. And Cousins never done that, and he's going to be even worse at doing that.
Yes.
And he might become injury prone because he's getting older. So, like, that concerns me, but I guess it doesn't change the fact that their floor is, I like them to win a division.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what, though? One thing they can do with him is move the pocket. He's moved the pocket well as a thrower. So, you know, like, if you can mix in some of these boot looks, if you can mix in some of this move the pocket stuff and stay ahead of the sticks, right? Because you don't want him back there on third and 14, but you have a running game that can help you do that. And so, I'm bullish on them
We haven't mentioned Bijan, who I think is like a lot of people we compare to Christian McCaffrey, because Christian McCaffrey is probably the best running back in football. And also, he became that in part because of, he was in a scheme that recognized his uniqueness. And Zach Robinson is, I guess he's from the Rams. You suspect that he's a smart guy.
It'll be good.
So
I've heard enough. He spent time with Sean McVay. It's like the new Washington coaching tree. You know, he's got his own tree. So, yeah, I think Bijan's great, man. Some of the cuts I saw him make early in the season, you're like, you know, with draft picks, you're like, when am I going to get confirmation the kid could be special? And like, it took a week. You know, some of the cuts he made, I forget who he's playing early in the season, but he caught the ball out in the flat and dropped two guys. And you're like, this guy plays at a different speed. He can lower his center of gravity without stopping, you know? And if you can get him matchups in the open field in the passing game, and, you know, as a runner between the tackles, he can be a differentiator. And, you know, what's cool about that is they drafted him. Mm-hmm. You know, I know it's obvious, but drafting a running back high is not roster suicide. Like, if you do it, the kid just has to be special, and you have to be able to cash in on that window. The reason that Christian McCaffrey works for San Francisco is because they were ready to build. Their team was built. I still believe this. That has to be the last piece of the puzzle. It's a luxury that you plug in when you think your roster's ready. So, like, when other teams pass up on CMC and you look at the success that San Francisco's had, you can't look at it and be like, oh, we missed the bus on that. Because CMC at some other place, you wouldn't yield the same returns. And so
we saw it.
Yeah, exactly.
Carolina.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's the names you mentioned, Kyle Pitts, Drake London, Bijan Robinson. That's why I like the move, because you invested 3 top 10 picks in these guys. Insane draft capital. And you have to put them in a situation where you can see what you have, where they can develop, and you can see if you have a star core that you're going to build around. And this is essentially a 2-year contract, which will line up with the extensions for those guys as well.
And you pick 8, right?
Yeah.
So that tells me something. That tells me that the top 3 teams are probably not moving off that spot. Yep. I'm sure they looked at least at moving up in the draft. So now you have a guy who's ready to play. And you have options. You can draft Michael Penix. You can trade back. You can, like, if you're in love with a quarterback, that's the thing about these quarterbacks, man. Who's to say who the best one is year to year? And so we slot them, but maybe the best guy's 10, like Patrick Mahomes, you know? Maybe the best guy's 32 or 33, like Aaron Rodgers. Like, more often than not, the first quarterback taken is not the best in the class. And so, you know, there is an opportunity to strike gold and, you know, bring that guy along if that's what you wanted to do.
That bleeds into some of the things that I wanted to talk about later. But before we get off to Kirk Cousins, the last thing that I wanted to bring up that I think is underappreciated, while I still fluctuate on where I'm going to land on how good I think they'll be, we'll see after the draft. They're going to be much better than they were, obviously. But the blitz. Like, I think that's one of the things that jumps out to me about what Kirk Cousins has done. And I know there are, like, assumptions that you make about a quarterback who's been around the league long enough, and some of them, for some quarterbacks, it's true, and for some of them, it's false. But one of the things is they understand defenses, and Kirk Cousins is not somebody who you will blitz and confuse, and he hasn't seen it before. And I think that's a steadying force for this team, avoiding sacks and avoiding big mistakes.
Look at the division they play in.
Yeah.
Okay. New Orleans is going to bring pressure. Mm-hmm. Todd Bowles is going to bring pressure. Mm-hmm.
Carolina.
I don't know what Carolina's going to do.
Yeah,
but
Carolina may not show up.
Yeah, but the point is, like, you're going to see some of that stuff. And if you can make defenses play left-handed because they're a little bit apprehensive about confusing your quarterback, that is a differentiating factor in the NFL now because there are so many younger players and quarterbacks.
We can move off this topic, but I was doing a little bit of research while you guys were talking. Mike the Headless Chicken became a touring sideshow for the last 18 months of his life.
Oh, he productivity.
Generated $4,500 a month in income for his owner, which is
incredible. I hope he took his money up front.
Yeah, the Kirk Cousins of chickens.
It was in the 40s, which...
equivalent to $59,500 a month now.
Oh, man.
Pretty good.
Damn, somebody really profited off that poor chicken and then...
It's not bad, but yeah, I mean, 40s, real Charlottesville generation.
Yeah, we go.
So let's pivot to the Panthers off this, because we'll come back to Teagans at the end of this. But we talked about this division a little bit and Christian McCaffrey, and that leads us to the Panthers and everything that's gone wrong since David Tepper has taken up ownership of that team. And they're in a really interesting position because they did not get the value they thought they were going to get for Brian Burns. The trade up to number 1 has not yielded the results they want. And they have a quarterback who was really talented coming out of Alabama, who looked really bad and is really small and looked really small on TV for that team. So my question for you guys is, have the Panthers already squandered any chance of making it work with Bryce Young?
No, I don't think so. I don't give up on guys that easily. Because again, what I said earlier is, like, context matters. CJ Stroud to me is special, right? Mm-hmm. He's in the 5%. Like,
yeah.
I think he's got a little Tom Brady in him, dude. Like, and I know that's hyperbolic, but I'm obsessed with the kid. The way he leads, the person he is. Like, when you hear about a rookie having the entire team over for dinner, like, every night, like, that's how the way they have built that organization is such a far cry from the way they built that Carolina organization. And, you know, bringing in D'Amico, who's not only a player, but well-respected as a coach. And, you know, like Caserio has done a really nice job. The pieces that they hit on in the draft, you know, the Tank Dells of the world, that sort of thing. The Will Andersons, you know, they're off to a good start. Carolina, you know, you got to do it all by yourself if you're Bryce. And that's a tough task. Now, I saw, like, in the Green Bay game, I saw some flashes, like, late in the season. That was a high-scoring game they ended up losing. But I think when you look at C.J. Stroud as an illustration of this, look back at the Jets game this year when they played the Jets in the rain late in the season and everybody was down. It was just C.J. and a bunch of guys out there. And he did not. Now, the Jets are a good defense, but he did not look good that day. And I know it's a small sample size, but I would just compare it to the sample size you're seeing of that's every week for Bryce. Mm-hmm. You know, when you don't have a bona fide number one, when the offensive line is terrible, dude, they couldn't even sort games. When the offense is in shambles and you're changing it halfway through the year and you're firing your head coach, that is like getting dropped into a battlefield, dude. You know, and so as much as I want to pile on Bryce, I would say give it time. You know, you might look up in a year and say, hey, the kid's not very good. But you might look up in a year with Dave Canales, you know, running the offense and say, all right, like this kid is 30% better and we just started the build, right? Because I wouldn't count what they did last year. It's like, you know, it hadn't even started.
But what happened last year does scar Bryce Young. So I agree with everything you said, but I don't know that I agree with the conclusion. And I would like to be able to publicly say that I think Bryce Young can be salvaged, but it can't be there. And I see so often it happens, and you and I agree. You say a bunch of things that I say all the time about how the context matters, and I think there are like a couple quarterbacks who you drop in a bad situation, they fix it immediately.
Yeah.
Not many. Yeah. But I think there are a lot more quarterbacks who are incredibly talented, who are drafted high into bad situations and were never able to like fully develop into the player. And I think that not just because of what happened last year, but because there is no hope for it to get better for Bryce Young. And no one's going to take a second chance on a 5'10 failure, essentially. And again, I wanted to be clear that I hate the concept of the NFL draft for this very reason, because Bryce Young is talented and a lot of quarterbacks that are drafted are talented, but you don't have a choice but to go to what seems like not possibly the worst organization in pro football. Like if you think of the things that have happened since Tepper took over, like the least embarrassing thing is when he threw a drink in a fan's face. Everything else that he did, like the trade.
Dude, let me just say this, the Brian Burns thing. And I think Brian Burns is a good player.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But when LA sent over all those ones, I thought that Carolina was on crack for not making that trade, dude. I was like, what are you doing? And now you see them ship them off for, you know, a 2 and a 5 or something like that. Like, you miss your opportunity. So I know you've got other examples, but that to me was like,
let me list them and you tell me if I miss anything. Because the big one is trading up to get Bryce Young. That's the big one that we're all going to talk about because they moved on all those picks.
And included
in that, they sent away a true number one. He may be not the best in the league, but he's a true number one receiver who balled out last year. A piece that you can build around. You sent that away, and it made it look even worse because the quarterback taken after it was the actual franchise changer. Yeah. And this was a decision that David Tepper made based on a whim and went against. So you invest a bunch of money in hiring Frank Reich and his staff, and everything we know is Frank Reich didn't want the quarterback. So why would you invest that money and then saddle the coach with a quarterback that he doesn't want? They hired Frank Reich after firing Steve Wilks, who like did pretty good.
Considering he did a good job, man. That team was tough.
6-6. They had a running attack. It had us thinking that that maybe Bryce Young was landing in a good situation. Like, all of this is terrible. Oh, he hired Matt Rhule. And his rationale for hiring Matt Rhule, while we were at that time, it was pretty bad, the number of black coaches in football. He said, I hired Matt Rhule because he reminds me of myself. He was a caricature for all the things that are wrong with, like, coach hiring process. And nothing that he has done has been any good. And I'm sorry, Bryce, but I wish you didn't get drafted to that franchise, but I do think that he's not going to ever live up to what we had hoped he could be. Because
listen, the chances of Bryce sticking the landing on this thing are low. But I agree with you in that. I think we agree in that, like, you don't get the full picture on a kid like that. Right. And so is he special? Probably not. But can he win? We might never know. And that's the sad part about being – listen, when I got drafted, I'm not a quarterback, but I got drafted number two overall – I'm a left end. They played me at right end for 2 years. Dude, like, if you're going to invest in somebody, like, maybe tailor things for their success. And, you know, like, when I switched to left end, I had 40 over 4 years. I had nine sacks for 2 years, bro. Like, people call me a bust and
Did you tell them? So, like, they put you on the other side. Did you say, like, I mean, I was a third round pick, so I ain't tell nobody nothing. Actually, I started talking towards the end of my third year, which ended up getting me traded. But anyway, when I first got there, but I feel like you second overall, you had to be able to be like, or did you just, you were just so engrossed in football culture that you were like, they tell me to go over here, I do it.
This is what I said. I said this to somebody the other day, like, what kind of regrets do you have as a player? I wish when I was young that I realized the clout I had, but I walked into a room full of, this is the old NFL, dude, and this is a different time when it comes to empowerment of players. So I walk into a defensive line room full of James Hall, Leonard Little, Fred Robbins, like, just guys that felt like uncles to me, and Leroy Glover. I didn't want to disappoint those guys. I didn't want to be Hollywood. I didn't want to be those things. And in the process of trying to do the right thing sometimes as a player, you forego your autonomy. And so, you know, like, this is just an example, but when I think about a quarterback and everything that goes into their success that has nothing to do with them, I really feel for some of these guys.
That's a, I think it's a common thing for football players. You don't push back when you think it's the wrong thing. But a lot of times the guys who have the nuts to push back, they got some bad ideas, but some of them turn out to, like, have a great deal of success because of decision make. I was surprised to hear it because you're from, like, the NFL is not new to you. Like, you grew up around it, and you would assume that those are the guys who are like, I understand this, I'm going to push back, but also is like,
I think that factored into it though for me, being from an NFL family. Like, I know when I walk into a room, people don't like me. Like, that's just the reality, bro. And still, as, like, a second generation guy with my dad having played and being a high pick, like, there's some people that resent, you know, high picks. Like, you know, like, why would James Hall like me, you know, the first day when he's a better player than me? I'm 23 and this guy's been in the league. He's got 60 sacks and I'm cutting into his reps and running out of the tunnel, starting with the team. Like, that wasn't the right way.
And that's before the rookie wage scale. So you,
and I'm
you
getting paid
up. Yeah. It's
you know, so I could feel the,
so
the,
you got to overcompensate to some degree with, like, the nice guy stuff to make
you
want to
be a team player.
Yeah.
You know, so it kind of, you know, it's tough when nowadays with players, like, they have a lot more power.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think you should lean on organizations and get what you want.
I like doing the old guy podcast where we are saying that we like the way the new guys operate. Like, I hate listening to the old guy podcast. Like, these don't know what they're doing. They're so soft now. Like,
bro, everybody. I was on the phone with Lane Johnson yesterday, and we talk a lot. And he's like, did you see some of the stuff that happened today? And he's like, man, dudes are getting paid. And, you know, almost like, how does that make you feel to see, like, Bryce Huff get 20? And I'm a huge Bryce Huff fan. Okay. I think that was the example. And I'm like, good, man. You know, like, because when I got paid, you know, and when I signed my big deal after the first deal, which was the rookie pay scale deal, but I signed a big deal, and I think it was like, and you know, none of these numbers are real, but I think it was like 70 or 80 over 4 or 5 years and whatever it was. And that's not a real number, but ultimately what it tells me is, like, now I'm looking at, like, third rushers who are getting that kind of money, you know, like double digits a year, that sort of thing. And so I know that I'm cognizant of the fact there were guys that were 10, 15 years older than me looking at me getting paid and saying, this is and so I don't want to turn around and be that guy to these guys, man. Like, Never. Like I'm fine. My family is taken care of. The guys I feel bad for is a generation before me that couldn't take care of their family. And then there was a big, with the NFL in the 90s kicking into a higher gear and, you know, the salary and cap then, going
I
mean, up.
Free agency happened. So, like, I'm especially because of my, like, union experience, I'm a lot like you. Is every time somebody get a big check, I feel good about it. And if people think they don't deserve it, like, that makes me feel even better. Like, good.
Yeah, well, you know what? And you've heard this. You are not, people say, oh, he's not worth that. You're worth whatever somebody's willing to pay you.
And you made the point that the people that before, like, it's funny because the people who made the sacrifices to allow us to get to a point where guys are getting paid like that, those are the guys who actually, like, have a legitimate gripe, because those are the guys who endured a strike, and those are the guys who had work stoppages and then had, like, penalties exacted upon them because the league was a lot more punitive against the leaders. But anyway, this is a way that a conversation Charlie didn't expect to go, and he hates unions.
Sorry, Charlie.
No, it's great. I will not be gaslit into hating unions.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic liqueur, Barnstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Swimsuit, check. Sunscreen, check. Phone charger, check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or in a carry-on. And the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Well, this is actually a good time to pivot to T. Higgins and what he's going to be worth on the open market and what he will fetch in a trade, because the Bengals franchise tagged him and he has formally requested a trade. This is a really interesting player, because you talk about guys who think they could be worth a certain amount of money and teams view this very differently. And it's a really interesting draft with 10 of the top 40 prospects being wide receivers and how that's going to shake up the wide receiver market. And this is vague, but how valuable do you think T. Higgins really is? Is he more valuable to the Bengals or to another team that can trade for him and sort of make him into that X, that number one receiver?
If there were no salary cap, I'd say the Bengals, right? Yeah. Like, because the thing that makes the Bengals tough, and, you know, Boyd factors into this, but he's somewhere else, or he's a free agent now this year, and you know, you lost Joe Mixon already, but, like, take the San Francisco game, for instance, and I know they improved since that game, but, like, this was November maybe, and it was a tough stretch for San Francisco, but you watch them dog walk San Francisco up and down the field, and it's because there are very few teams that have enough guys to cover your third guy. You know, if you have two bona fide guys outside, you know, and then you've got a third guy that's a good player, chances are there is a fish back there, as we would call like a fish on the offensive line, a fish in the secondary, whether that's like Thomas or, you know, whoever it is in that scenario. Having that bona fide second number one just opens up so much for you. The matchups can be deadly for the other side of the ball. So I feel like he's very valuable to the Bengals. Now, if you're going to tell me that they're going to draft a number one at wide receiver with the depth of the wide receiver class and that sort of thing, great, but you have to nail it. And so, yeah, you are walking out on the plank a little bit trying to make the right move in replacing him. But I do think he's very valuable to the Bengals. And I think he could be valuable to somebody else too. But like for him, he could end up in another situation and have to be the guy. And it might not be a great situation. You might look up in a year and be like, that wasn't worth it. I know you'll look up in a year for Cincy and be like, that was worth it. But there is a cap and you know, there is the franchise tag and there's everything that goes with it. So I'm not really sure how it plays out.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I like T. Higgins as a true number one in any situation, but this sucks for them because I think you're right. Everything you said makes sense. And there are even numbers that suggest that they're better on off numbers without T. Higgins, but I like good players. Yeah. He's a good player. Let's
good player.
Get him on the field and let's make it work. But the thing about this that I think is interesting, because I think a few weeks ago I was thinking you just pay him and then you try to figure other things out. But what changed my mind about it is thinking about the Mahomes Tyreek Hill move is like, yeah, like you mentioned, there's 5% guys in the league that will change the weather. Like, they are so good that a rainy day team becomes a sunny day team.
Yep.
And you pay them that way, and that's how you have success. You got Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
So if you got Joe Burrow, you should not have to overinvest in wide receiver. And, like, having those two guys would be nice for Bryce Young or for somebody who needs that help. So
that's the exact team I was going to say for.
If you have Joe Burrow, then that is like you should be able to add resources other places. However, they got really close to the Super Bowl.
But the KC thing, you just brought up the KC thing, and I think it's a great point, but I look at it like the situation is a little bit different, right? Because you got Andy Reid, and yeah, I'm not saying Taylor's not a whiz and all that stuff, but – you know, like you've got Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes is the guy, right?
Yeah.
Burrow is one of those guys, yeah, right? He's not Mahomes, but he's one of those guys. And I can't believe last year we were doing this thing at the end of the season where you're like, oh, is it now Joe Burrow? And, you know, like because he beat him once or twice. But I think what Kansas City has is they have an elite defense that's allowed them to go through this period of transition. They have a great play caller, and they also have an offensive line that's built to run the football. And I think when you look at Cincinnati, so much of what they do is gun run. And, you know, like this year especially, I felt like at times they went away from some of the power football. I thought when they were really good a year or two ago, it was gap scheme. It was like, we're gonna kick your ass. And I don't know that they have that same identity. So, like, while I think Joe's awesome, he's got to do a lot himself compared to Mahomes in a weird way.
Yeah, but the Mahomes point, the reason why their defense is awesome is because they traded Tyreek Hill and they nailed those draft picks.
Yep.
It's part of the reason. And that's what you need to do when you have a quarterback that's good enough to keep you afloat and good enough to like make plays in close games, because most football games are going to be close in the fourth quarter.
Yes.
And you have a guy that can make that difference. And you have, I guess, the Kelsey comparison would be Chase. I think is probably better than Kelsey, but
right now,
yeah, it's not necessarily as impactful on to his specific team. But I do think that you have to move on. You can't get too tied up in that wide receiver position if you're paying a true X, which they are.
They're also a timing offense.
Yeah,
You know, like, and that's another thing. Like Mahomes, Kelsey, you see the way they play. They play backyard football and out of structure. And I think Joe, when he's really elite and at his best, they're getting the ball out, they're hitting those outs, they're taking what you give them, and he's moving well inside the pocket, but he's not back there for 5 seconds, and so they can play a little bit out of structure. But I see what you're saying, dude. Like, and having Anarumo, who seems to be too old to get a head coaching job, you know, like he's a great D coordinator, and so you have that. You know, it's not quite Spags, but you know, I think they can stick the landing.
I also just feel like I am pro keeping T. Higgins, mostly just because like Burrow has said that the windows every year that he's there. And he's right, but it's also right now. They're really close if they're healthy.
But the pushback I would have for you there is, like, I don't disagree with you. Is my argument is normally, let's go all in. Yeah. Like, you have to go all in on the Super Bowl and we'll figure it out later. Like, I really love what the Rams did. It was like, hey, F them picks. Let's go all in. We have a shot. However, if you don't win it, you end up like the Bills.
Yes.
Which are like, yeah, the Bills, they wouldn't let any good players leave. And they went and got everything they could and got themselves in position. And then you get unlucky or you run up against Patrick Mahomes in a couple of times. And then you don't win that Super Bowl. And now you're at a point where they're like, hey, maybe we move on from our coach after this season. Like,
yeah.
We're really concerned. And that's part of it.
Can I ask one philosophical question about this, though, with trades in the NFL? In the NBA, it becomes incredibly toxic if a player requests a trade where they more or less have to get what they want or it'll f*** up the entire locker room. Not the case in the NFL. Like, if they find a way to bring T. Higgins back, it will be cool because he's there and getting paid what he wants.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Like, most people in the NFL, like, we're way more like a working class, like, where we're just like, hey, it is what it is, man. You know, like, we look around the locker room and somebody might get a little shafted on their deal, but you're not going to like have a mutiny over it. In the NBA, there's just so much more player power and, you know, you can lean on organizations and people. So I don't think, like, generally, I've never been a part of the team where we made a move and people were up in arms to the point where it affected locker room chemistry or the way things played out on the field.
Or if a player demands a trade or does anything like that, like, we kind of understand the business is separate. It's always been that way where a player could say whatever the hell they want about this team. And when they come back, we all smiling and happy. As long as you don't throw me personally under the bus, we are good to go. I think it's, to your point, the player power is so concentrated and the class delineation in the NBA is so big, whereas there's quarterbacks in football, and then the rest of us kind of in a glut together. We see it the same way, whereas in basketball, it's like there's two or three guys that matter, rest of you guys, or have power and influence, and they're so reliant on those guys that I think it impacts their relationship. It's a lot more high schoolish than football, whereas
I agree, it
feels more like work, and we're like, oh no, we all are laborers, blue collar guys, the whole laborers. NFL.
Yep.
All right, nothing else to talk about?
That's it.
You want to tell Chris what you suggested for our off top?
One in every 18 people have a third nipple.
No way.
See?
I don't believe that.
We're looking. We're trying to find it because we've asked how many people so far today?
Like seven?
Like seven people.
I know one person that has a third nipple. I can't remember who it is, though.
Harry Styles has four nipples.
Dude, all right. No, this is BS because I've been in a locker room for 11 years, okay? And in St. Louis, I played with probably 3,000 people, right? Because they were just cycling them through. I've never seen a third nipple in a locker room.
I mean, you see things that you aren't necessarily looking to see. There are certainly memories I have from the locker room that...
Nick Foles?
I never played with Nick Foles. However... There are memories that I have from the locker room. However, you're not looking around counting nipples. I feel like you probably played with 100. But the thing is, we make fun of everybody.
That's the thing. If somebody had a third nipple in the NFL, everybody on the team knows about
and
it.
And then people get confused why a guy whose name doesn't sound like this, everyone calls him Triple.
Yep.
Like, hey,
Triple.
Trip got the sack. I see you, Trip. Everyone would be very confused.
Uh-huh.
Like, is he the third?
Yeah,
no, he's not the third.
You got a third nipple, bro. I've never seen it, so I don't know. I believe the chicken won more.
Okay, well, we'll keep counting, but Harry Styles, his nickname would be Quad, I guess. Yeah.
Anyway. He's got four nipples?
Four nipples.
That's what Charlie said.
Yeah.
Maybe it's possible that they don't look like nipples. They probably don't got areola around.
I was born with a sixth finger.
What?
Yeah. And my dad had the same sixth finger on the same hand.
Oh, so you were born with it, so you don't have it anymore?
No, they just chopped that thing right off.
Right from the start?
Yeah, dude. They didn't even check with me.
My 11-year-old son, when he was 10, he found out that we made a decision when he was born, and he was like, y'all didn't even consult with me? I was like, no, bro. Like, no, like, what are you doing? Nobody does. But I'd be a little upset if somebody cut my sixth finger off.
I'm a little upset about it. Now it's just a factoid.
I know. Who knows what you could have done with an extra finger?
Exactly, dude.
Oh, well, anyway, well, thank you so much. Everyone who doesn't should check out the Greenlight Podcast, Chris Long's awesome podcast. Download, rate, review, give it 5 stars, and then come back and do the same thing for mine.
Got to get you on, man. Appreciate you.
Anytime, brother. I would love to come on your show and make things uncomfortable. My favorite. Oh, I got a question for you. This is a question that Charlie wanted to answer to before I let you go.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, you're going to want to
answer. I don't even remember this.
Well, all right, once I explain it. I mentioned that we ran into you at Vegas. We hung out. We had a great time at the Kelce party. Once we left the Kelce party, we all came out. You got into a car with people that was different from the car that we got into. The person who you got into the car with, was he mad at me?
Oh, not at all. Yeah, that guy loves you. That guy loves you.
I love. Okay, well, now that we know that, that's true, we could say that guy was Ryan Russillo.
Yeah. But listen, here's the thing about Ryan Russillo, and you get to know him a little bit. Like, if somebody doesn't like Ryan Russillo, he's like anti proving otherwise. Like, he's like he puts no effort into making you like him. Yeah. And the coolest thing I saw for Ryan was like, you guys, your budding friendship in the industry, because I think you're both so great and different enough that the content's awesome whenever you're on his show and vice versa. So, you know, watching you bust his balls getting into the SUV, I was like, okay, they are boys.
Yeah, like, that's what I was telling Charlie. I was like, he wasn't actually mad. Like, we just give him a hard time.
There was a text that didn't get responded to afterwards. And really, but we weren't.
He sucks on the phone, dude.
We've talked since then, and he's gonna come back.
We love him.
And I'm gonna go back on there.
He's that brain is powerful.
Oh yeah.
He never stops thinking.
All right, I don't want to let you go because you're awesome, but this has been fun. Thank you so much, man. Super Bowl champ.
Anytime, bro. Jealous. Get that helmet off the table, will you?
We will not replace that helmet.
Get out of here, I'm
Virginia
gone.
Helmet. We will not. All right, brother. Thanks a lot. Have a good
one. See you guys.
Thank you to Charlie. Thanks, Chris Long. Special guests, of course. Thank you to Serafina, Megan, Brian, Kevin, Podville, and Cortez.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.